The Rogue Ghost, Episode 15. Clad only in a hastily snatched towel, I braced myself for what lay ahead, my heart pounding a frantic rhythm of anticipation and fear. With bated breath, I edged closer to the source of the intrusion, every nerve in my body tingling with apprehension. And then, like specters materializing from the depths of the night, they appeared before me, Cerberus Syndicate agents, their presence as ominous as the shadows from which they emerged. But it was the figure among them that sent a chill down my spine, RG's former lover. As she stood there, a silent sentinel among the chaos, I knew that our sanctuary had been breached. The game had changed, and we were no longer the hunters, but the hunted. Hello there, fellow enthusiasts of the mystical. Your fearless guide, Runeweaver, is commandeering the narrative ship of our beloved Rogue Ghost podcast again. Imagine this scene, an unexpected plot twist that throws us into a whirlwind, leaving our dear Rogue Ghost resembling something akin to a statue, forever frozen in time. Tragic, I know, but don't pull out the violins just yet. Even in the deepest shadows of this unexpected freeze-over, a tiny spark of opportunity flickers, ready to set the night ablaze. Because, when the world throws ice, it's time to lace up our metaphorical skates and glide. In the true spirit of a girl who's watched one too many action movies, I'm about to crank the thermostat and melt some obstacles. So, fasten your seatbelts as we leap into the great unknown, armed with the triple threat of wit, bravery, and an unrelenting resolve to shine a light so bright it will turn night into day. Let's hit the rewind button and do a quick recap, because, oh boy, do we have a story on our hands? Picture this, our quest uncovers none other than the Rogue Ghost's long-lost presumed dead sweetheart, Jennifer, or Jenny for short, though the air's now peppered with a few choice nicknames I'm biting back to keep this episode PG. Now, imagine our shock when his so-called angel turns out to be playing for the other team, the Cerberus Syndicate. You think you know a person, right? And, for the grand finale of her treachery, Jenny reveals herself from beneath the guise of Sister Marie Therese, throwing us the curveball that we weren't the sole aficionados of Shimmer Ring trickery. Cue the dramatic reveal, she literally drops a cold-hearted bomb on us. This isn't your garden variety plot twist, this is Jenny turning RG into a modern-day ice sculpture exhibit, hipster edition. There he was, struck mid-pose, mid-disguise, by her icy betrayal, frozen in time like a character from a paused video. It's the kind of plot twist you'd expect to see in an episode of Supernatural, not in our real-life magical mystery tour. Just when I thought the situation couldn't get any more Twilight Zone, in strides the real Sister Marie Therese, shattering the eerie silence with the kind of entrance that would make soap opera stars green with envy. The look on her face was one for the history books, like she'd just seen a ghost, or, you know, a frozen one. With the air of someone who's had one too many encounters with the supernatural before breakfast, she spills the beans about our dear Jenny's grand exit with the third puzzle box in tow. But here's where the plot thickens, folks. Amid the whirlwind of betrayals and icy heartbreaks, Sister Marie Therese drops a hope bomb on me. She's got a secret, hot off the press from Jacques Vincent himself, yes, the mastermind behind our very own stained glass saga. Our dear Jacques, it turns out, was not just the guardian of the most enigmatic stained glass window in town, but also a keeper of magical mysteries and, apparently, an organizational genius. He had tasked Sister Marie Therese with finding a cryptic, mystery-shrouded stonemason in the UK to craft his gravestone, a gravestone that, as it seems, doubled as a magical treasure map. Jacques had also spilled the beans about the world of enchanters and magic, leaving breadcrumbs for those with the right kind of eyes to see. He seemed to think Sister Marie Therese had the right mojo to spot the worthy adventurers meant to follow his trail. Stepping in, we appeared to fit the bill like we were tailored for the role, ready to dive headfirst into whatever magical rabbit hole Jacques had left behind for us. With a touch of the dramatic, Sister Marie Therese then revealed another little secret, pulling back her sleeve to unveil a mystical eye tattoo that mirrored mine. A bond over ink and magic, perhaps, but it added another layer of intrigue to our already convoluted saga. So there we were, still navigating this twisty tale without our dear rogue ghost, who's currently more statue than sidekick, thanks to Jenny's frosty farewell gift. But don't you worry, the show must go on. And while Argy's on ice, I'm cranking up the sass and the smarts to melt away this chilly predicament. Let's dive back into the fray, shall we? Because nothing keeps Runeweaver down, especially not a frozen comrade and a backstabbing pseudo-nun with a penchant for dramatic exits. I was still marooned in Montreal, but enter Sister Marie Therese, our beacon in the magical fog, who whips up a solution quicker than you can say abracadabra. She summoned Xavier Blake, not just any garden variety enchanter, but the guy that delivered Jacques Vincent's gravestone, a man whose past was as shady as a back alley. While I dropped my guard with Sister Marie Therese, revealing my true self, I kept Xavier at arm's length under the guise of my hipster alter ego. After all, a girl's got to maintain some mystery about her, especially in the company of a guy whose history read like a diary of magical mishaps. Yet, amid this dance of disguises and hidden truths, a niggle of concern wormed its way through my mind. Our hipster facades might no longer be the foolproof cloak we thought, especially with Jenny and her syndicate friends potentially wise to our masquerade. But hey, optimism's the name of the game, and I was betting on their eyes being dazzled by their shiny new puzzle box prize rather than lurking in our direction. Xavier was initially as reluctant as a cat at a water park. But a cocktail of guilt, a sense of duty, and maybe just a pinch of curiosity about our bold endeavor coaxed him into joining our mission to save RG. He unfurled a plan as sparkling with potential as it was steeped in desperation, using a mystical elixir derived from the root of an elusive magical flower, Medi's Flor. My mind raced back to one of RG's thrilling recounts of his heist from the Spectris Order, which, as fate would have it, included a bottle of this very potion. And wouldn't you know it, this particular bottle was by sheer coincidence, gathering dust on a shelf in our watermill basement. And, there we were, Sister Marie Therese holding the fort next to RG's statuesque predicament, while Xavier and I readied ourselves for a journey more audacious than a Harry Potter movie marathon. This venture hinged on Xavier's intel on a clandestine shadow gate, ingeniously concealed within the historic alleys of Montreal. And what was Xavier's fee for this globe-trotting escapade? A handful of jewels. Lucky for us, RG had stashed away 5 sapphires from his recent magic time trade-in. Our mission was clear: dash to London, grab the Medi's Flor potion, and zap back to Montreal to unfreeze RG. It was a plan so bold, so fraught with the potential for misadventure, it could only have sprung from the depths of our ongoing saga. As we hopped aboard the Shadowgate Express, whisking us through the fabric of reality like we were on a magical mystery tour, Xavier and I popped out in London, a stone's throw away from Westminster Abbey. In a bid to keep our cozy watermill hideout a secret from prying eyes, including Xavier, I hooked him up with an overnight hotel stay, leaving him with a promise of a sparkly sapphire payday. Now, flying solo, I hit the streets with a mission burning in my veins. Xavier, left to his own devices, probably spent the evening pondering life, the universe, and his shot at magical redemption over a room service club sandwich. Shedding my hipster facade like last season's fashion, I gave the shimmer ring a break, it deserved it after all. Boarding a train to Sheffield, I couldn't help but feel like the star of a retro spy flick, minus the trench coat and the dramatic music. Each second that passed was a stark reminder of RG, paused in his frosty predicament, awaiting the salvation hidden within the cobwebbed nooks of our hideaway. The journey was a blur of landscapes and the constant chatter of fellow travelers, oblivious to the fact that their fellow passenger was on a quest that could have been ripped right out of the pages of a fantasy novel. I'm just popping off to save a friend from a permanent ice sculpture fate, no big deal. Amidst the journey's monotony, a moment of revelation struck as I glanced at the enchanted Christmas card. A new star had twinkled into existence on the front, a silent testament to the third puzzle box's discovery, albeit now in the clutches of our foes. Accompanying this celestial newcomer was a fresh riddle inside, unraveling from the card's magic. It said, "In a realm where birdsong fills the air, four voices blend with a prodigy's flair." A melody whispered in the wind's gentle hum, hints of a city where dreams and music become one. Intriguing as this new clue was, my current priority remained steadfast, to breathe life back into RG, saving him from his icy limbo. Hailing a taxi from Sheffield Railway Station, like I was some sort of secret agent in plain sight, I zipped back to that quaint country lane, home to our own VIP Shadow Gate. Now, crossing my fingers and hoping RG had left the magical equivalent of a spare key under the mat for me, I reached out to the door handle, half expecting some arcane security system to demand a password or challenge me to a duel of wits. To my immense relief and slight surprise, the door swung open to usher me back into our watermill lair, a hideout so snug and steeped in mystery it could easily give the Batcave a run for its money. First things first, I had to check on our little bottled miracle stashed in the basement. Laying eyes on that potion felt like spotting an oasis in a desert of chaos, a tiny vial of hope amid our storm-tossed voyage. And there it was, looking as innocuous as an old bottle of perfume, blissfully unaware of the pivotal role it was about to play in our high-stakes drama. So, after indulging in the ultimate symbol of culinary ease, a frozen pizza, a testament to our makeshift kitchen's capabilities, I thought a hot shower was the next logical step. Our watermill, a fortress of secrets and silent battles, might have a rustic charm, but thanks to some timely upgrades, we weren't exactly roughing it in the dark ages. So, there I was, basking in the steamy embrace of modern plumbing, trying to scrub off the weariness of our never-ending saga, when an unsettling noise snapped me out of my momentary bliss. It seems we had company, and not the kind you welcome with open arms. Wearing nothing but a hastily grabbed towel, my heart drumming a frantic rhythm, I crept toward the source of the intrusion. My pulse spiked as I spied several Cerberus Syndicate agents, their figures methodical and menacing, rifling through our sanctuary. And there, among them, as if mocking me from the shadows, was Jenny, the Benedict Arnold of our tale. Yet, as they scoured our home, they remained blissfully unaware of my near-naked existence, mere feet away. The blood enchantments RG had meticulously woven into the walls of our watermill were holding strong, casting a veil of invisibility around me. With every ragged breath I took, I dared not move, not even to stop the droplets that fell from my hair, ticking away like a silent unseen clock against the old wood floors. The air was thick with tension, each moment stretching into an eternity as they prowled through our hideout. Under the cover of RG's cunningly placed perception magic, the watermill appeared to them as nothing more than a relic of the past, untouched and uninteresting, a derelict shell hiding its true inhabitants. It was a dance of darkness and deception, with me as the unwilling participant, cloaked by spells and the remnants of my shower. There I was, a statue of suspense, every nerve alight with anticipation. The notion they could have traced me here was absurd, I was meticulous. And our shadow gate wasn't something you'd stumble upon in a Sussex tourist guide. Yet, here they were, skulking about, not necessarily with me as their quarry, but with their sights set on the first two puzzle boxes, the ones we had in our possession. Time stretched on, each second a silent standoff, but finally they withdrew, their departure as silent as their arrival. The danger had passed, for now, but the memory of their presence, the invasion of our sanctuary, lingered like a bad taste. It served as a harsh reminder of the razor's edge we walked on, a world where danger didn't just knock on your door, it searched for you, hungry for the secrets we guarded. As the silence settled back over the watermill, the jeopardy of our situation hung in the air, a palpable threat that loomed, even in the supposed safety of our own walls. This was no mere game of cat and mouse, it was a chess match with the highest stakes imaginable. And as I stood there, shivering not from the cold but from the rush of adrenaline, I knew our battle against the shadows was far from over. Post-Jenny Gate, as I've now dubbed our latest syndicate shenanigan, I found refuge in the underbelly of our watermill fortress, surrounded by the soft hum of computers. It's like white noise for the technologically inclined. My thoughts were a whirlwind: concern for RG, curiosity about Aunt V's mysterious storage unit, intrigue over the masked ball in Prague, and, not least, the bitter taste of defeat, having the third puzzle box snatched right from under our noses by what's essentially RG's evil ex and her merry band of syndicate goons. This cocktail of dilemmas and the recent uninvited syndicate raid on our humble abode spurred me into action, transforming me into a veritable siege engine, aimed at cracking open the stubborn secrets of the first two puzzle boxes. There they were, perched on my desk like two sphinxes, challenging me with their silence. Their intricate locks jeering at me in a language of whispers and shadows, leading to a frustrating realization. Here's the thing about frustration: it's both a relentless pest and an unexpected muse. It gnawed away at my patience with the tenacity of a persistent itch. Yet, it fueled my determination to crack open these enigmatic containers like a nutcracker on a tough walnut. Several hours passed by as I prodded, poked, and coaxed the puzzle boxes, hoping for a sliver of revelation, a whisper of their concealed mysteries. But the dang things were about as cooperative as a toddler at bedtime. I mean, there I was, trying to align the festive-themed images like some sort of mystical jigsaw master, and what do I get? Nada. Zip. Zilch. The puzzle boxes remained as tight-lipped as a scandalized aristocrat, their intricacies locked tight within layers of cunning craftsmanship and ancient magic. But did I falter? Did I throw up my hands in defeat and declare a moratorium on all things puzzle-related? Heck no. I'm Runeweaver, slinger of sass, breaker of codes, and the bane of inanimate objects that dare defy my will. With each failed attempt, my resolve hardened, tempered in the fires of stubbornness and sheer bloody-mindedness. Because here in the shadows of our watermill, among the relics of our quest and the ghosts of battles past, defeat isn't an option. It's just a pit stop on the road to victory. With the break of dawn casting a fresh layer of potential across the sky, yet shadowed by the frustrating defiance of the puzzle boxes, I prepared for the day ahead. Xavier's V, a quintet of sapphires, were secured in my backpack. Right alongside them, the potion, encased in enough bubble wrap to cushion an antique vase, promised a glimmer of hope in the race to save the rogue ghost. Embarking on the return journey to London, I booked a taxi to collect me from the country lane near the Shadowgate exit from the watermill, a move that prompted an eyebrow raise from the driver. His curiosity about my presence in such a remote spot at the crack of dawn was evident, his glances in the rearview mirror loaded with unasked questions. I imagined he'd spin tales of mysterious passengers for weeks to come. The train ride to London was an exercise in blending in with the bleary-eyed commuters, all propelled forward by the steadfast march of routine. Yet, beneath my guise of normalcy lay a mission far removed from the daily grind, a quest tinged with magic and steeped in urgency. In London, a swift visit to the bathroom allowed me to summon my hipster alter ego once more, courtesy of the hacked shimmer ring. Disguise reactivated, I waded through the busy streets, my eyes behind the enchanted glasses scanning for danger. Each person became a potential threat, every shadow a possible ambush. Yet, the city's heartbeat pulsed, oblivious to the clandestine dance of predator and prey, and my journey went unchallenged. Reuniting with Xavier, I parted with two of the sapphires, with the remainder of his payment contingent on our safe return to Montreal. The air between us was charged with an unspoken understanding, a shared acknowledgement of the stakes at play. Our voyage back to Montreal cut through the fabric of space with the precision and urgency of a surgeon's scalpel, as we used the same shadow gate for the return journey. Xavier, now somewhat richer with his partial payment, was a study in quiet contemplation, perhaps mulling over the ramifications of our endeavor or the value of the jewels in his pocket. Arriving back in Montreal, the palpable anticipation could almost be tasted, a bitter tang of hope and desperation. We were in a race against time, a mad dash back to St. Agnes Church to thaw the rogue ghost from his unintended stasis, to breathe life back into the narrative that had taken an unexpected pause. In this high-stakes game of magical chess, every move, every decision, teetered on the edge of catastrophe and salvation. Back under the hallowed, and let's admit, slightly eerie arches of St. Agnes Church, the moment came to bid farewell to Xavier Blake, my temporary compatriot in this whirlwind of magical mayhem. With a flourish worthy of a stage magician, I handed over the rest of the sapphires, our agreed-upon fee. Xavier, sporting a smirk that hinted at his satisfaction, casually mentioned that my bat signal, or whatever the magical equivalent is, was all he needed for future capers, for the right price, of course. Trusting him? Well, let's just say I wouldn't bet my life on it. But having Sister Marie Therese's stamp of approval meant he wasn't entirely unwelcome. Watch this space, Xavier. You might get an encore. Now, it was the moment of reckoning. Sister Marie Therese had stayed true to her word, keeping a watchful eye over our frozen rogue ghost. My return through the mystical stained glass traverse, back into the chamber that had witnessed RG's heroic, heart-stopping sacrifice, felt like stepping back in time. My heart hammered a frantic rhythm, a mix of dread and hope, as memories of RG's leap to shield me from that cursed bomb replayed in my mind. Xavier's parting words of wisdom were simple, just douse RG with the Medi's floor potion, and voila. Easier said than done, but with a deep breath, I uncorked the potion, holding the bottle like it was the Holy Grail itself. The scent of aniseed filled the air, potent and pungent, as I tipped the bottle and let the dark mysterious liquid cascade over RG's frozen form. The potion, a shadowy stream of miracles, painted glowing veins of orange across his petrified figure, each droplet a beacon of revival coursing through him. And then, those glowing veins ignited a transformation. RG's body, locked in an eternal hipster tableau, began to stir. The potion wove its spell, unfreezing him from his magical paralysis, bringing warmth back to his cheeks and a flutter to his eyelids. With a sharp intake of breath, like a diver surfacing from the deep, RG gasped, and it was music to my ears. Until next time, my kindred spirits, keep the flame of belief ever burning.